welcome to Xylene Voices, an educational podcast series that features interviews with today's thought leaders in the training industry. I'm Dawn Poulos, your host. Our guest for today's podcast is Ellen Wagner. Ellen is partner and principal analyst for Sage Road Solutions, where she's responsible for learning industry intelligence and enablement solutions. Ellen is the former senior director of worldwide e-learning at Adobe Systems and has served as a senior director of worldwide education solutions for Macromedia. She is the author of the e-learning road trip blog, where for over a year now, she's been exploring issues related to sustaining innovation and accelerating mainstream adoption of learning technology solutions. And today we're going to talk to Ellen about challenges instructional designers face on their way to becoming learning technologists. Can we kick off this podcast by having you give us your definition of a learning technologist? Because I think this is a term that could mean a lot of different things to different people. And in your opinion, how do you think that this role is different from that of an instructional designer?
I like the term learning technologist because it's really, for the first time in a long time, speaking to the two biggest things that people creating learning experiences actually have to be able to do. And this is really, it's a recent realization, and I want to give Cami Bean credit for getting me to think about this particular topic. Somebody working in the e-learning industry who is, you know, really looking at what people like all of us have to do to be successful. So for me, when I look at a learning technologist, it's, as I said, bringing two halves of the things that make this particular practice unique at a time when people need to be able to bridge that space between learning and technology. So in the past, instructional designers probably fulfilled that role just fine because in the day when we first started talking about instructional designers, the role of technology was really far less significant than it is right now. These days, you can't do the type of work that most of us do without having technology as a part of the formula. I mean, so much so that I know there are many people coming to the practice of e-learning, coming to the practice of learning technologies without having any formal learning background at all, but they have great technical skills and they understand how to create experience. So I think that the ability to speak about instructional design as we did, say, pre-2000, has shifted just by virtue of the dependence we have on technology.
Ellen, can we stop here and focus on something that you just said about creating an experience? Because I think that this is something that the industry struggles with as they work to create compelling and engaging e-learning for users.
Many of us that came to the idea of doing learning design or designing instruction or even taking technology and making it compelling, we forget that a lot of what we are doing is creating enough hooks, motivational hooks, experiential hooks, to make sure that people stay there with us, that they don't click through. And this is, I think, a real important difference for those of us who have made this transition from really purely thinking about what goes on in a classroom and taking a fairly straightforward lecture recitation model of getting something done, and, you know, trying to come up with ways that leverage technology effectively, but are also able to do things in learning settings that really engage and inspire people more to do what we know learning can do. I think, you know, learning designers have this unique opportunity to really be at, in some respects, you could think of it as a point of friction, because this is where people who care about cognition, people who care about affect, people who care about what gets people hooked, what makes people not click off a page, you know, how do you take the tools on the other side and make sure that you leverage those in the service of getting more on the learning side, especially when those of us on the learning side haven't had the degree of technical skills required to do that now with many types of systems. So, you know, in some respects, it's just a sign of how our field has matured. But you still need to have people, you know, it's the people who live in the middle, the people who live at that point of intersection really are different than learning professionals. And they really are different than IT professionals because they have to do both. And that's something that that I think for many people in instructional design, for so many years we believed that what made us credible was the ability to take design and make it work in any number of settings. So we look a lot like our customer base. And I think these days, given how critical it is to get people to really leverage learning using technologies more effectively, it's a whole different ballgame for people like us.
Thanks, Ellen. That was terrific. And I think that the points you bring up are really salient. If you read what's going on in the blogs out there, a topic that comes up over and over again is how to create compelling and engaging experiences, especially when we talk about rapid e-learning. Now let's move on to our next question. There are two areas of technology that have become really key enablers to the way we live, work, and learn. And I'm talking about mobile and social media. So my question is this, let's start with mobile learning. Are we as learners, instructors, educational institutions, corporations, technologists, are we ready for mobile learning? I mean, I know we hear a lot about it, but is this finally happening?
Mobile learning is getting a lot of attention right now because it's finally reached a tipping point of where enough of the big ideas have started to have opportunities to really grow. You know, 5 years ago, people were getting all excited about the prospect of mobile learning because the possibilities of what these phones would be able to help us do really started to become obvious. But there were some really interesting twists and turns in that 5 years. So, you know, even before that point, when 5 years ago, when people looked at mobile phones as the means of doing this, we had, you know, people looking at PDAs or people looking at tablet computers as being mobile learning. So, you know, good news right now is that it's finally reached a point where it's hard to argue with it for a bunch of reasons I'm going to come back to. The part that you asked, you know, are corporations ready for it? They know they have to be ready for it because it is an irrefutable fact of life in the world we live in these days, that if you want to reach somebody, you have to be able to have them available on a tool that they have available most frequently. And the more that we all find ourselves not being tethered to a desk or wanting to be available 24/7, the more that we're finding that some of the consumer tools that we've depended on in other parts of our life really are becoming the primary channel, particularly as they start becoming more powerful, networks are getting better. So I think what we've all realized is that while the excitement around technical possibilities for mobile learning have existed for a while now, that the infrastructure for getting this done really wasn't ready yet. And there are a couple of key points for that. In one case, we didn't have a network capacity worth talking about to get reasonably or rich enough web experiences on phones. So that has a lot to do with what we're talking about. The phones didn't have the processing power. But a couple things have also changed. Podcasting, such as this, podcasting really popped onto the scene about 4 years ago. And that shifted people's understanding of what mobile learning was going to be away from phones and more toward untethered devices. So, you know, people all of a sudden opening up their minds to the possibility of mobile learning, not necessarily be drill and kill practice games on a mobile phone, that it's going to start taking different forms. And I think the other things we're starting to see now with mobility is that the more that you can start pushing rich experiences, the games, the apps that iPhones have been so incredibly successful at demonstrating, you know, apps are a whole way of taking the notion of learning objects that many of us were interested in a few years ago, self-contained content for learning. Well, you put it into an application and you actually have a lot of what we're talking about. And finally, video is going to be possible because of these networks on multiple devices. So the issue here is less about a particular, I mean, the breakthrough has really been, Apple has been a breakthrough company for a bunch of reasons. But what we're seeing is that as a result of reframing what the opportunity is, it's less about the devices and the apps. It's more about the notion that we're all more comfortable with the idea that we're all mobile. We all want to have this stuff when we want it. So, you know, are we ready? Well, the companies are starting to look at it because they've had to go to dealing with servicing company phones or figuring out what to do with the fact that when people are traveling, they have to get into all their different systems. So, you know, are they completely ready for it? As long as learning professionals can show that there is a significant reason why a mobile solution makes sense for a company. It's certainly worth taking a look at unique instantiations a company can do. I think a big thing, though, that's going to really tip us all in this direction, which I think is going to be the killer app of this coming year, the fact that people can get online and they can start using the mobile web, that there are more and more mobile sites on the web and that more and more websites are being designed with mobile use cases in mind. I think the big thing we're going to see is that by the end of this year, we're going to start seeing that the so-called mobile web and the real web that we all use is really one and the same, and that truly we're going to be getting to a point where it won't matter what type of device you need to use to get to access it.
And I have to tell you, I personally cannot wait until that moment arrives.
Tired of carrying all those devices, huh?
I am.
Okay, so social media for education or social learning is a huge topic as well. And you and I were just talking about this before our podcast about Twittering and blogging. And I'd like to take this one step further with this podcast. What are the key technologies that you think we should watch? And do you think that we're going to see social learning become integrated into educational departments and corporate training departments? Or do you think we're going to continue to see it as something done at a grassroots level?
I think people appreciate that the richness of interpersonal engagements, I mean, whether they're a conversation like you and I are having right now, or whether it's the fact that as you and I are talking right now, I could very easily get a tweet which references some type of a website that's absolutely germane to what we're talking about right now, and all of a sudden you and I could have our conversation enriched by the fact that somebody we don't know provided a link to something in a serendipitous moment. So, you know, the power of that kind of experience, it speaks pretty nicely to learning, because there is a motivation to stay engaged. I mean, it's sort of that, you know, what's going to happen next experience, that sometimes when you're in the lecture recitation mode, you know what's going to come next. And you know you can be, you know, we've all learned how to learn that way. We all get information out of it. There are always good reasons why, you know, you can get a lot of information out that way. But the back channel opportunity to talk about that, even while the true experience is going on, you know, in some cases I think we're going to have to get okay with the fact that not every single engagement or every single moment in a learning environment is necessarily got to be measured, that in fact maybe the process of learning is less relevant for that level of measurement and really looking at the outcomes of what an engagement may need to be. So, you know, it's a long answer to your question, but social media is absolutely here to stay. It's what the entire participative web is talking about. You know, in fairness, most of us have only recently really figured out what to do with the fact that the Web 1.0 resources, you know, all the publishing, whether it's multimedia publishing or PDFs or what have you, that was a huge shift for most of us, being able to literally, you know, self-publish and distribute wherever, and to find groups of people who wanted to read our information. Being able to bring this next dimension into the conversation is an absolute natural evolution of where we're going to want to go with this.
And this concludes today's podcast. Ellen, thank you so much for joining us. I thought that was a terrific discussion.
Thank you.
You can learn more about Ellen Wagner by visiting her blog, eLearning Roadtrip. There you'll find links to her presentations and papers, as well as information on her latest research and trends that shape the future of e-learning today. You can find a link to Ellen's blog at the Xylene Voices homepage, located at www.xylene.com/podcasts. Thank you for joining us for this broadcast of Xylene Voices, an educational podcast series sponsored by Xylene.